Hey guys, and welcome to the Moms and Murder podcast, a true crime podcast featuring myself, Mandy, and Melissa. And she is going to talk eventually, but she is actually sick this week, and you're going to get to hear my voice a lot because she can barely talk.
Listen to me, guys. Don't I sound great?
It was me last week, her this week. Hopefully next week, we will all be back to normal.
We're working.
We're working on it. Yeah, we're actually several days behind on recording this episode, but even though we're under the gun, we're going to get it done because we would never want to leave you guys hanging without an episode on Tuesdays.
There you go.
So actually, Melissa does have a couple of notes that we're going to share with you guys today. A few points we want to go over before we get started, and I will let her kind of go into that, and we'll see how that goes with her speaking voice.
My husband's going to kill me. He does all of our audit, our editing, and so there's going to be like 5,000 notes for me that says cough, sniff, please edit. So we have a few housekeeping notes, which is appropriate as we are moms and we are basically like servants and don't get paid and all that sort of thing. So it works for us. In the coming weeks, we have a few other podcasts we're going to be collaborating with, doing some fun stuff. Some of us might be featured on a few things. By some of us, I mean both of us. And so some really cool, fun things with other podcasts we really enjoy. So we'll let you guys know about that. One note, I already told Mandy about this and she got a good laugh. We really do believe that in each of these podcasts, people are innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
No matter what we think about the toot toot guy, people are innocent until proven guilty. So I wanted to put that out there.
Yes.
It's an important piece. And so although we do have theories and stuff, that's a very important thing to remember. Also, we have a new Facebook discussion group. Mandy, do you remember what the long title is to our Facebook discussion group?
Moms and Murder Discussion group?
Probably. There could be an extra word, but I think if you type in Moms and Murder, you should find us. It's a fun group. We have several people in there now talking about different episodes, random things, different shows, whatever you want to talk about. We're just keeping it really light, politics free, because we do that with our own podcast. So if you guys want to come in and join us, we would love it. Also, today we're recording our first Patreon episode.
Yay!
Very excited. And so we're going to basically keep Patreon episodes mostly to some unsolved stuff with people still lurking out there. So if they want to kill us after they hear about us, at least they paid us a few dollars before they found out that we talked terribly about them. So
yeah, we're a little nervous about those cases where the perpetrator is roaming free.
Yeah.
And, you know, can find us.
So. You know, throw a couple quarters at me and it'll all be worth it. Just right. Throw them in my casket. That's fine. And lastly, we talk about iTunes reviews at the end of our episodes. And it's so nice. And we've had so many wonderful iTunes reviews. And we appreciate the feedback from everyone. And on our Facebook group, lots of reviews. And that's been really nice. Stacy is someone that's a new person listening to us, who's very sweet. And we've gotten to talk to her some. She talked about iTunes guilt, and I guess she did not have an iProduct, and it wasn't able to leave iTunes reviews. And she said every time she kind of heard these people talking about wanting iTunes reviews, she always felt so guilty. So don't feel guilty. Don't feel bad. If you can't leave us an iTunes review, no big deal. Share us with your friends. Tell your neighbor. Don't tell like a perpetrator or anything, because we don't need those people listening or finding out about us. But so don't feel guilty. We enjoy and we're so happy you guys are listening. So I'm passing it to Mandy before I cough all over myself.
Okay. So this week we are going to go into the case of Sherry Rasmussen. And this is not a recent case, so you may have heard of it if you are really into true crime, which I think everybody listening is. This actually happened in the late 80s. So we'll start just with a little background on the case. And as all the other cases go, they get a little wild and crazy.
Also, whenever Mandy first brought up this case, I was a little on it because
I actually was too.
Is it terrible that because it was from like the 80s, I look at them and I'm like, I don't know. It doesn't seem so maybe real. I don't know what it is. But all that terrible hair and feathers everywhere and stuff. It just was like, I don't know how much I can get into it, but I got into it. So,
well, I did too. Actually, I had a hard time getting into it. And as I said, we were kind of behind the curve this week. You know, we normally record episodes on Wednesday nights, and today is Sunday. And so we are really, really under the wire here. But, you know, after I started getting into the details of the case, I realized that it really was not as boring as I initially thought it was.
No, it's crazy good.
So, yeah, all the great elements of a really good true crime case are there. So with that said, we will just go right into it. In 1986, Sherry Rasmussen,
I'm glad you're saying that,
tongue twister, was a 29-year-old newlywed living in a condo with her new husband, John Rutten. And this was in, I don't even know how you
say it. Van Nuys.
Oh, you?
Yes.
Thank you for saying
that. I'm so excited. Okay. N-U-Y-S apparently is eyes. And I can't wait till Roseanne from California Dreaming Pod hears us pronounce this. Please tell us we're doing it right, but I think it's Van Nuys.
Okay. I never would have said it like
that. Or Van Nuys. I don't know.
Okay.
Go with Van Nuys.
We'll go with that. In California. she was a graduate of Loma Linda University and was the director of nursing at Glendale Adventist Medical Center. And she was very successful and highly regarded by her coworkers. I believe she was actually a critical care nurse, but she also had moved up the ranks and kind of started doing teaching classes like to other nurses and doing a lot more of that type of stuff around the hospital.
She was a boss lady.
She was, yeah. And everybody really liked her. And like I said, she was very successful and really liked her job and loved doing nursing and taking care of people and everything.
Back to the decades. You know, whenever you see people from different decades and you're like, is this person attractive? Like, would they be attractive now? Or were they attractive in that decade? I can't tell. She was really beautiful.
Right.
I hated her hair, but very, very beautiful.
Right. Well, we hate her hair now because it's 2017, but... That was the hair back then, though. That was like what she had.
I'd like to think I would have hated it then, too, but I would have really just been jealous.
It just, I know, one of the pictures I saw of her online, it just reminded me of like the old glamour shots where you go and like they'd really tease up your hair and just an old 90s, you know, with the blurred edges. You know what I'm saying?
Very soft.
Yes.
Did your mom ever do, we used to do elephant ears? Like,
oh my gosh. Spray? My mom did that until she was like, I don't even know.
No, did she do it to you, though?
Oh, no, no, no.
I remember panicking on my way somewhere with my mom and screaming, give me elephant ears, give me elephant ears. So if you're begging your parent to give you an animal-type haircut, back away. And parents, don't do that to your child.
Yeah, let's just stick to the, you know, the basic hairstyles. So her husband, John, was a mechanical engineering major and had recently started a new job with an engineering company. Those who were close to the couple and knew them well said that they were really great together. They were crazy about each other. You know, they had a great marriage and great relationship.
And John was very good looking.
He was extremely good looking. I know. It really just makes everything so much better when the subjects of our cases are attractive.
Or very busted. Like there's a nice little difference there. But no, he's one of those you see him and you're like he's like Benjamin Button or something. Every decade I saw him and I was like, wow, how is this? Are you John Hamm? I don't understand how he still was so attractive, but he was a very handsome man.
All right. We need to calm down over here.
Sorry.
on the morning of February 24th, 1986, Sherry had called into work and she said that she had a back injury from an aerobics class and she wasn't going to be able to make it that day. So John left her home on that morning and went into work as usual.
Right.
And around 9:45 a.m., a neighbor noticed that the garage was open at their condo. So they lived in a condo. I'm guessing they must have had like – I don't know how they had a garage if it was a condo. Like they had a personal garage.
Well, don't they sometimes have like the condos upstairs and then you can park downstairs?
I don't know what the fancy people of California do.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't have things like that here.
Florida, we got nothing.
So he had called the house several times throughout the day, probably just to check on her since she wasn't feeling well.
Right.
And all of his calls went unanswered, but he, I guess, just assumed that she was lounging around the house.
And it's not the age of like cell phones and stuff. You can't text somebody and say,
it just seems so, I forget. This is in the 80s. So yeah. So if you call someone and it rings and rings and rings and goes to their answering machine
with their tape.
So nothing like it is today where you can just send an instant quick, message and get a reply.
Gotta be harder to get away with murder now. That's what I think.
Yeah, that's for sure. So Sherry's sister said also that day that she called the residence and did not get an answer. Then around noon, two men who were believed to be groundskeepers or gardeners on the premises gave the neighbors a purse that they said that they had found. Hmm. Well, that purse was later determined to be Sherry's purse. And there was also a maid cleaning a nearby condo unit that claimed that she had heard two people fighting and what sounded like something was falling around 12:30 in the afternoon. So when John returned home that evening from work, he found, of course, that the garage door was open and Sherry's car was missing. So a little note about this car. This was a BMW that he purchased for her as an engagement gift.
Of course.
I don't understand how we've managed to find all these cases where everybody is so rich that they can do things like give you a car as a gift.
Right.
And well, I mean, when I got engaged, the only gift I got was the ring.
Right. So I got two. Like, I thought that was a gift. But also, it reminds me of like a push present. I did not get a push present.
I don't understand those.
I mean, I'm jealous of those.
Right.
Straight up. my push present was the child screaming, coming forth from my undercarriage. So,
Oh my gosh. Okay. Melissa's going to have a coughing fit after all of that. So I'm just going to continue on here and we're just going to ignore that. So anywho, I actually have written here in my notes, why didn't anyone buy me a dang car?
Yeah. But our notes are very, very good, guys.
Yeah. So he thought that it was strange that she would have left the house without really mentioning it to him, just given, you know, her reasoning for staying home in the first place that day. And I guess he also realized that their answering machine was not activated, which was something that they always did when they left the house. So
what an 80s thing.
I didn't even know. Like, I don't know. This whole case, guys, happened before I was even born.
Oh, man. Don't tell people that. I was definitely born, but you don't need to know how old I was. So
I was.
Don't tell people.
I was probably Mandy. A thought at least.
You were a twinkle in your mother's eye. I love your mom.
I know. She's great. When he did get home, like I said, there was broken glass on the driveway. The garage door was open, and he just made his way on inside to check out what was going on.
Sure.
So when he got inside the residence, really the first thing that he saw was Sherry on the ground. And, of course, she was dead. And she had been beaten really badly and shot three times. So it looked like somebody possibly had maybe broken into the house.
Right.
And, you know, maybe it came upon her and didn't expect anyone to be there. And, you know, it was just a bad situation where she ended up getting killed in right. some kind of a home invasion or something like that. And that's kind of what all the – that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
There was some signs of a struggle. Like, you could tell that she had really put up a fight with whoever was in there with her. There was a credenza knocked over, which – okay, what is a credenza?
I was going to say –
is it like a sofa table? Yeah,
hold
like,
on. What is I'm that? Not even – nope. Unless we can go back and edit this, I'm not guessing anything.
No. I think it's like one of those just – it's a long table.
So dumb. We're on so much medicine right now.
But just, how do you knock over something like that large? I don't know.
Well, I saw that the struggle could have taken up to an hour and a half.
I saw that too. Which is a long time to be having a physical like confrontation with someone.
I have literally stabbed myself to make it be over. Like I can't, right. I'm not going toe to toe with somebody for an hour and a half. 5 minutes, I'm out of here.
Right, exactly.
Like dead, I'm fine with that.
Right. You're fine with that.
I've accepted my existence. I'm done.
Oh my gosh. So there was also a bloody handprint next to the alarm system's panic button. So it was obvious that she was trying to call for help, which is just really heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. When I saw that, I was like, oh, that's awful. And then there was also a porcelain vase that looked like it had been broken over her head before the shooting. So this was a really severe scuffle that was going on
yeah.
between Sherry and her killer. And, you know, it just was a bad scene from everything that I gathered. She had bruises and things on her body, and they said that they most likely came from the muzzle of the gun. And so, like,
oh, wow.
This poor woman was just, you know, really beat up. But then the other thing that they noticed, which was kind of strange, was that she had a bite mark on her arm. Hmm. And what's kind of strange about that is that typically what I had read from the investigators had said about this was that typically when somebody is bitten, it's right. usually done by a woman, okay, because men are not that petty, I guess. Well, why would you bite someone?
Well, all I can think is if there's a struggle and maybe they've got the upper hand on you and you bite them to, you know, that's like a jerk reaction or whatever. Maybe being a woman, I thought that made a lot of sense. Right. Bite her.
So she did have a bite mark on her arm. And like you just said, and it probably was just that, like a defensive kind of.
I don't think it's like the you bite. Pull my hair, I'm going to bite you now. I think it was in the heat of the moment. What else can I do?
But like clearly this person had a gun. So yeah. Like I don't understand how we got from, I don't know.
They could have never wanted it to have come
how
to
did
the
we
gun,
go from
though?
Biting to shooting is what yeah. I get confused.
It's a natural progression.
Right. So the detectives on the scene swabbed that area and placed it into evidence for DNA. And they did not have the technology to test DNA like that, like right. we do now. So, which I always think is so cool when I hear of that, because I'm like, same. How did they know to save that? Like they knew that if one day?
Yeah, like, they knew about the future?
Yeah. Like I don't wonder. I mean, I guess, I don't know.
I feel the same way. I'm always, they're like, and then we tested this from 400 years ago. I'm like, whoa, wait, right. How did you know to save that?
Right. You know? And so it makes me wonder like what kind of things they're saving today that we
ooh,
will maybe. Use later. Yeah.
Well, thank deep goodness thoughts. We're not a part of this because we would throw everything away.
Yeah, seriously.
I get tired of clutter.
I don't keep anything.
Away.
Yeah. There's no way I'm keeping a little tube of anything.
I know. Thanks for this picture, kids. Looks like the last one you gave me. It's going in the trash.
So, anywho, so they kept the DNA under lock and key for years and years and years. Okay. So, like I said before, the detectives very quickly determined that this was a burglary gone bad, and they kind of began to base the entire investigation off of that. And they had said that Sherry was found wearing like night clothes, like a robe and a nightgown and slippers right. and whatever. She was not, didn't look like she was going to be having company or be going anywhere.
Right.
So the neighbor had heard the fighting sounds and kind of wrote it off and thought maybe it was just like a domestic thing or what, maybe she was arguing with her husband or whatever. Didn't really want to get involved. I guess maybe it wasn't, didn't sound, you know, she said it didn't sound that severe.
Where it didn't like, sound like it was going on for an hour.
Right.
And a half.
Where the police needed to be called. And then she also said she did not hear gunshots or anything. Hmm. So, but then I did read that apparently Sherry was actually shot through a, like a quilt, like that. So
muffled the sound.
Exactly. So that, you know, so she didn't, which is just kind of crazy because that doesn't really go along the lines of burglary either. So
none
you would think
does.
That they would have had some kind of tip, you know, that a burglar is not going to go get a quilt and, you know, go through all the trouble to do that. You know what I mean? If that's just there, and nor are they going to stay there for an hour and a half. That's right. Just stupid for them. That would not be.
One thing I read that they did find at the bottom of the stairs maybe was like a VCR, something else, VCR maybe, I don't even know, tape player, something else, kind of where it was like maybe they were in the process of taking stuff out, then they run into her and decide this was a bad idea, almost setting it up, if you were staging a scene, things that you would look for. So when they see that, they think, oh, well, yeah, clearly this person was trying to take this out and they got stopped.
Right.
Are you ready to revolutionize the way you enjoy food and essentials at home? Introducing DashPass from DoorDash, your ultimate ticket to convenience and savings. With DashPass, you gain exclusive access to unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts that will leave your wallet smiling. Whether you're craving the flavors of your favorite restaurants, need groceries from across town, or anything in between, DashPass ensures that everything you need is just a few clicks away, delivered right to your door. With DashPass, not only do you enjoy $0 delivery fees, but you'll also benefit from lower service fees on eligible orders, making it the most affordable way to satisfy your cravings and stock up on essentials from your local favorites. What I really love is how quickly DashPass pays for itself. On average, it takes just 2 orders, which makes it a no-brainer investment for your budget. And as if that weren't enough, DashPass grants you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, adding an extra layer of excitement to your DoorDash experience. You get all this for only $9.99 a month, which is a small price to pay for unlimited convenience and savings. My family and I have had DoorDash for the past year or so, and while I make most meals at home, I don't know that I could mom without it. I used it twice just this past week while we were dealing with a stomach bug at home, and it was so nice to have and to be able to focus on getting better and not running all over town to pick everything up for everyone. Don't wait. Sign up for DashPass now and unlock a world of possibilities, all from the comfort of your home. DashPass from DoorDash, delivering joy, convenience, and savings straight to your doorstep.
Get more from delivery for less with DashPass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for DashPass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
Who has 2 minutes and needs a win for the day? This gal. And that's why playing Two Dots is a win for me. Two Dots is a free-to-download puzzle game where you connect two dots or more dots of the same color. Easy enough, right? Here's the catch. You can only match them horizontally or vertically, but never diagonally. And as you match the dots, they're taken out of the game, and the dots above them move down, making it possible to find even more dots to connect to win the round. I'm on my 17th level. I actually got through 15 yesterday, which was my first day of playing, and I really love it. It's the perfect game for me. I love a game I can just pick up for a few minutes to play a quick round, or even to play while I'm watching or listening to Forensic Files. And Two Dots needs no Wi-Fi to play, so it can be played online or offline, which is really nice, especially because we're about to be in hurricane season, which you guys know my feelings on that. I also love the uniquely designed challenges, game modes, and levels as you go along. If you're like me and you just want a game where you can use your brain all without feeling like you're losing your mind, Two Dots is the perfect game for you. If you are ready to kick back and unwind, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS and start connecting.
So they also said basically that the BMW was stolen as the getaway car after this happened. And then the only other thing missing was John and Sherry's marriage license.
Sure.
So that's a very odd thing to just go missing.
Yeah. Also, how would you even notice that was missing? Like, that would take me, like, until I had to renew something.
Right. Or I wouldn't even know. I know.
Death? I don't really know when that would come up again.
Unless maybe they just had it. I mean, they were kind of newly married, so maybe they had it out or, you know, maybe on a dresser or something.
I mean, if your piece of cake from your wedding is stolen from the freezer, that would make sense. But your wedding, I mean.
Please don't take the cake.
Don't eat it either. That sounds so disgusting.
I did that. You're weird. We did that. No, we're not weird. I'm sure lots of listeners have done it.
You're all
weird. We saved
it.
We froze it in a deep freezer, thawed it out a year later, and ate your old cake. It was great. It was so tasty.
I think I probably ate a donut that day anyway, so it didn't really matter.
So the lead detective on this case was Lyle Mayer, and I love that name, Lyle. If I ever have another child, I might name him Lyle.
I will not have another child, and so that name is not on my radar. Congratulations, though.
Yeah, for my future potential son, Lyle. Actually, I have two boys already, so if I ever had a third boy, I would just send me to just commit me right away.
It won't even be a question. They'll just do it.
Seriously.
You'll have a baby and they'll just send you.
So Lyle Mayer briefly looked into other possibilities for how Sherry's death could have occurred. And he quickly ruled out the grieving husband, John.
Yeah.
And John, by the way, just got out of Dodge right after this happened. Yeah. He moved and quit his job and everything and moved away, which, very understandable. I don't think I would want to stay.
True, but I felt like they did not spend very much time on, like, I've heard of people's alibis being I'm at work and still they're in prison for 30 years. So right. I don't really understand how they're like, oh, this guy. But he was kind of like John Hamm's character in The Bubble on 30 Rock, which is my favorite
episode. This is the second John Hamm reference today,
because
guys.
He was on 30 Rock and he was in The Bubble, and how, like, for these people, everything's just magic and people, like, try to have them become models on the street and stuff. This guy was that good looking that, like, they were probably like, oh, you were at work? Okay, great, great, great. Have a good day.
That's how I would interact with him.
Yeah. I would be so nervous. It would not work good.
Seriously, if you haven't yet, you need to go Google John Rudin, because he is a good looking dude. If you need a little.
So much cough medicine. So much cough medicine.
We have problems, you guys. Oh my gosh. So the police remain focused on the suspicion that this had been a burglary. And they really, their theory was kind of substantiated by the fact that there was a similar robbery that took place just a little while later. And it kind of had the same sort of look as what happened at Sherry's place. So they were like, okay, that's for sure.
Yeah.
She got robbed and, you know, like they killed her. And now we're looking for these two suspects.
Right.
So they had like, you know, what do they call them? The drawings.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to make you think about it. The sketch.
Sketch. Yes. They had these sketches done. And so they're like looking for these two men who they say have done this. Because they think it's two people, not just one. They think there was definitely two people there. So that was that. So with that's really the story of what happened in the case. And, you know, as these things go, there's always more to the story than what just what the story is.
The rest of the story.
Yeah. Does that mean there's more to the story than – I don't know. I need to stop.
There's going to be some edits.
Yeah. So while John was in undergraduate school, and now we're going back a little bit to kind of give a little bit of background because you need to know it. So when John was in undergrad school at the University of California at Los Angeles, he casually dated a woman named Stephanie Lazarus.
Oh, Stephanie.
Stephanie Lazarus. She also attended the college and was a political science major, and she and John were both pretty good athletes. She played on the basketball team. I don't know what he played, but he was like the star. The star player.
He probably sucked and they still made him captain. That's how good looking he was.
Probably. But they had just what he said their relationship was nothing more than, and this is a quote, necking and fooling around.
So the only word I hate more than petting is necking. Ugh, it's
awful.
Bums me out so much.
I know. So, but she kind of was a little bit obsessed with him.
What? Fatal attraction, Mandy.
A little bit. Just a little teeny tiny bit. She would do things like when he was showering, she would go like steal his clothes. And when he was sleeping, she would take naked photographs of him while he's asleep. Okay, I have so many problems with this.
Hold up. So this was in 1986. She had to go somewhere to get these developed. True or false?
I would say true.
True, right? So how did you get this done?
I know. I mean, I guess
I'm always thinking logistics on these things.
Well, you know, okay, so back when I was even in like high school, we would get the little like $7
disposable cameras.
Yeah. So we would do that. And then it's always fun to drop them off and see, you know, how your pictures turned out. So I'm assuming it was something like that. But I bet those people who develop pictures have seen it all.
But I thought they're supposed to like call the authorities.
Yeah, if it's like a kid.
Oh. So this is
– and plus, he's a really good-looking guy. Yeah.
So, maybe they enjoyed. Who knows?
They might have.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to get into my story. Go ahead. Continue.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm for sure. Okay. It has nothing to do with me, though.
Okay. So she would do all these weird things that are not really typical things that someone would do.
Of humans. Right. Yeah, of humans.
That someone would do, period.
Yeah.
That's it. So even though, like I said, they were in this type of – kind of sexual relationship.
A necking
and fooling around relationship. They weren't serious. At least according to John, he said they weren't serious. He apparently liked the arrangement they had going on. So that's that. So they actually continued to have that type of relationship even after graduation. And John went on to work for a company called Micropolis, and Stephanie completed the police academy and became a uniformed LAPD police officer in 1983. So they kind of went their separate ways, but they would continue getting together, apparently, which is just
– in the Marvin Gaye sense.
Right. And, like, I don't really understand – that type of relationship where you just like meet up, and I don't understand a lot of types of relationships because I met my husband when I was 17. So I'm not very, you know, well versed in how different types of relationships go down.
I watch TV, so I do think this happens, but
It just seems weird. Like, it seems like at some point you would make it more of a thing.
Someone's going to want it to be more of a thing. Right. And Stephanie did.
She sure did.
This is my new radio voice.
So at one point, Stephanie had thrown John a 25th birthday party. It was a surprise party. And but at this point, she was unaware that John had been seeing other women. So you can imagine how that's going to go over when she finds that out.
Guys, this would have been a Lifetime. This could have been what Lifetime Movie Network was made on. Like, the whole network was based around this,
this story.
Yeah.
I agree. There's so many, like, just parts of this that it would make a great Lifetime movie. So when Stephanie found out that John was in a serious relationship with Sherry, of course, she got really depressed and upset. And, you know, she really didn't like that too much.
Sure.
And she was actually wrote a letter to John's mom. This is in August of 1985. Mm-hmm. Right. And right. Like, you're not his fiance, wife, nothing. Like,
yeah.
I would be really freaked out if just some casual encounter started writing letters to my parents.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little strange. But she wrote a letter saying that, quote, "I'm truly in love with John, and the past year has really torn me up. I wish it didn't end the way it did, and I don't think I'll ever understand his decision." So she clearly had a lot more feels for John.
lots of feels.
And that he did not reciprocate, because at this point he is now in a serious relationship with Sherry.
Right.
So in Stephanie's own journal, she even wrote things like, I really don't feel like working anymore. John is getting married. You know, she's clearly torn up about this.
Sure.
She's writing letters to the parents. She's writing in her own journal. I mean, it's like her entire day is consumed with thoughts of why, you know, of John with his new relationship.
In fairness to Stephanie, Sherry was a very beautiful woman. And if you've dated somebody and they've broken up with you and they're getting married, you want them to marry like a butt ugly, like...
Well, we know John wasn't going to
because... Yeah, but you don't want the person they marry to be, like, really beautiful. You want it to be like, oh, they screwed up and they are no longer with me. But no, this was not a butt ugly swamp woman. Sherry was really beautiful. And so I kind of, like, I got a little bit of her rage there. I'd be a little upset as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand.
Also, Stephanie never had a good haircut in her 50 plus years of life.
No. And
none ever agreed with her. So many feathers.
Even to this day.
To this day. Prison couldn't get her a good cut.
So she apparently had gone to meet John at his condo after all this has come out. So this is after she's gone crazy and writes in her journal and all this stuff.
Right.
And so then she calls John, I guess, and I don't know, says what. I guess she just says, hey, John, I want to come over.
Yeah.
Because I'm
missing the necking. I hate it so much.
So that's exactly what they did. They had sex with each other. And this is like during, like I said, this is during his very, air quotes here, serious relationship with Sherry.
Yeah.
And here comes homegirl from down, you know, and she wants to get it on. So they did. And they did this. And the reason was so she could have closure. Because that makes total sense.
Yep.
When you're trying to get someone out of your life, sleeping with them is definitely the way
to
do it.
Leave me alone. Let's try this again.
Right. So later, in the night after she did that, she actually woke up one of her fellow officers and wanted to, like, talk to him about it and probably just had, like, a little cry fest or whatever she did. But I'm sure.
Or boiled a bunny on the stove, because this is fatal attraction.
Right. But this is so messed up, though. Like, I feel like even for John, like, you would think.
Oh, he's the worst.
Yeah, he is the worst. Like, why would you even entertain that whenever you know this person is clearly having some issues getting over you? And if you really wanted her, like, to go away, you would have just said,
go away.
Like, you cannot come to my house. Like, you know. So Stephanie would also do some things like showing up at Sherry's job.
Sure.
And this is kind of like escalating behavior. Like, come on, it's time to let it go. Like, yeah. You know, like, leave this poor woman alone. But she would show up to her job and harass her about John and would say, like, oh, that if she couldn't have him, then no one could.
That is a Lifetime movie quote, I swear.
It's like the classic Lifetime movie quote, actually.
Come on, that is so dramatic. And during this time, Sherry even said, I think to her dad, like, she was considering breaking up with John over this harassment And I don't blame her. That's a whole lot of crazy. Coming into your work.
Right. And I would be like, yeah, if you cannot get this under control, like, we just can't be together. Yeah. I wouldn't want that in my life either, especially with her job being, you know, she was very important. Right. And she definitely could not afford to have drama at her place of work. Honestly, I would have kicked that girl's butt if she came walking into
my job. She said she was like coming in all like dressed provocatively to see Sherry. That didn't make any sense to me.
No.
And with that haircut, you're just not going to be able to pull it off there.
So, yeah, basically all that to say that Stephanie was really obsessed with John in the worst kind of creeper type of way.
Yeah.
Just you don't want to have a person like that in your life. So if you do, then...
We're not giving a PSA on this. Just move on, people.
Okay, fine. Okay.
No necking.
So Sherry's parents, Nels and Loretta.
Nels.
Nels. I wonder if that's short for something.
I hope it. Nelson, it has to be.
Oh, duh. I didn't even consider that. They always believed that Stephanie was a prime suspect in their daughter's murder just because of things that Stephanie, of course, Sherry had shared with them about things that Stephanie was doing, and she kind of felt like that Stephanie was stalking her and was kind of hanging around, and she would, like, see her everywhere she went, you know, just random places when she would go to the store, like, oh, guess who else is there at the same time, you know, just stuff like that.
But she would say that she told her dad, like, you know, it was this person, blah, 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 and they had crazy eyes.
That's how she described it, so crazy eyes.
Perfect. Totally. I hope that's not an offensive phrase, but I'm sorry. She had crazy, crazy eyes. Crazy eyes.
She was crazy. So it works.
Like, I felt it like it was just manifesting.
If the shoe fits, right?
Her crazy was manifesting out of her eyes.
So one of the reasons, I guess, that her parents felt strongly that Stephanie may have had something to do with it was because Sherry was actually a really tall woman. I read that she was almost 6 feet tall, or she was 6 feet tall, which I don't know anything about that. Melissa here is at least 7 feet tall.
No, so. I'm 5'12".
5'12". I'm like barely 5 feet.
Ugh,
so
I hear about
she
you petite
towers
people.
Over me, guys. I'm scared whenever we stand
next to each
other.
No, I'm graceful like an angel. That's what I am.
Graceful like an angel.
You're right.
So because of this, and because also Sherry was very physically fit, and she, of course, like I said, did these aerobics classes and all that. And like,
not me. Ugh,
I just envy this life. I want to go to aerobics classes.
Mandy, we're not actually in 1986.
But it would be so fun.
I know. We just want time to do things that we're never going to do.
Yeah. It sounds good in theory.
Yeah.
Basically, they're saying that it would have been hard for someone to, like, subdue her, you know, because she was a physically fit and tall woman.
Not true.
You know.
Height has nothing to do with that, I can tell you. Again, I would quit very quickly.
Well, this is just what her parents said.
Yeah. So she was a better person than me.
So in 1993, the technology for DNA testing did become available. So 1993 is... How long after the?
I want to make you do
this
the
happened
math.
In 86.
It was seven.
Okay,
seven years.
So 7 years later, the DNA testing did become available, and Sherry's dad actually offered to pay for it himself because he just wanted this done, you know. Yeah. And they had already, you know, they have gone all these years now without having a solid answer on what happened to their daughter. You know, who killed her, and that's got to be heartbreaking for parents to not have, you know, even if you have suspicions. You want that, like, definitive proof so that you can put the whole thing to rest and, you know, just have closure with it and know, you know.
Yeah. And John wasn't involved in the investigation. He wanted nothing to do with it. And the dad basically said, I think if he would have even said, look into Stephanie, they would have looked into her. But since it was just the parents saying it and they never knew her name.
Which is also so weird to me that he was like bowed out of it. Like, this is his wife. I mean, they were newlyweds. Like, they were about to start their life together. You would think he would be a lot more invested.
He was in the bubble, Mandy. If you're in the bubble, you just, your life just is the only thing that matters. So telling you.
But then also, like, you would think too, because obviously he knew about Stephanie's obsession with him.
Yeah.
So you would think that even he would have had a little bit of, you know, suspicion.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Like, at least he would have thought maybe.
That whole thing gives me question. I don't think he had anything to do with it. But
right.
I feel like he could have been more forthcoming.
Right. And more helpful with nailing down the person who did this. But so The police told Sherry's dad that they would need a suspect in order to complete the DNA testing. So that's like a slap in the face, I feel like, to the parents. Like, they're saying, like, no, we don't take you seriously, and we're not going to, in, you know, test the DNA against this person who has been proven to be an issue, you know, who or who was an issue.
When you have no other suspects, you know.
Right. And what's it going to hurt? Just do it, you know, and then everybody
this is
can
why we're not in law enforcement.
Right. I have no idea how expensive this testing is or anything, but
legal our ideas are, but just do it.
Right. So they, so John and Stephanie actually briefly reunited in 1989. And apparently John had called the detectives and that were working the case to ask if they still thought Stephanie might be a suspect in his wife's murder. So what? Okay, first of all, why are you getting back with this person? I don't know. You would think just move on with your life completely.
Everyone.
Like X everybody out that was part of it before. Start fresh. And clearly he like would not have a problem getting a woman.
Bubble. I'm telling you.
But he goes with good old Stephanie. And by the way, something hilarious. Stephanie Lazarus had cute nickname, apparently, that her coworkers and friends gave her.
So at first I thought it was a little bit offensive, until I watched her interrogation video, in which I thought, oh, well, that was nail on the head. What is her nickname, Andy?
Her nickname was Spazarus. Which I just love so much.
I want to laugh, but I'll just start coughing.
So, I know. I'm on the verge of coughing too.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
So in the meantime, Stephanie continued her career with the police and went on to start her own investigation firm. So she became, which is just so weird to me. Honestly, it just makes me like sick to even think that she was.
In all fairness, she became an art detective?
An art detective.
Well, that wasn't it. It was like a high, oh my goodness, something like, I don't know. It sounded like a Nicolas Cage movie or something. An art heist detective, which I feel like, are you on call for that? Like, how often do they need you to look into these cases?
Right. It seems kind of like a parody job.
Right.
You
know,
like it's like you want to be a cop, but you're just an art detective. So I don't know. It seems kind of funny to me.
Yeah.
But she eventually did marry another man, not John, and adopted a daughter with him. Right. So she kind of went on and started a life and put all of this whole thing behind her.
Sure.
Which, you know.
Couldn't have done that before.
Right. Exactly. So John also remarried and kind of moved on with his life.
Yeah.
So, and that's where things pretty much kind of the trail went cold kind of thing. Yeah. And nobody really got into this in, for years and years to come. So actually, when I say years and years, I mean 23 years passed, you guys, before any break in this case came about. And it was still unsolved. Okay. And then a cold case detective squad decided to reinvestigate the case in February of 2009. So this is pretty recent.
Yeah.
And they discovered that the DNA from the bite mark on Sherry came from a female. Hmm. So that kind of discredited their whole entire theory about two male robbers coming in.
Right.
And, you know, at this point, the detective that had was working on it was wanting to take a lot closer of a look at Stephanie. And after reviewing like the case files and everything, she had said, you know, what about this female that was kind of a problem for Sherry? And, you know, there was some reports of her doing things like going to her office and harassing her and all that. And, you know, they said, we really do want to just check into that a little bit more. Yeah. And meanwhile, like I said, Stephanie is a officer working right next door to where these people are investigating her, you know, and she doesn't have a clue. And so she, of course, they knew they had to kind of tread lightly because this is going to be an armed officer. So they wanted to make sure that whenever they approached her with this to talk about it, that everybody was going to be safe. So they came up with some crazy plan to tell her that she had like a – they had to talk to her about a case that she was working on, or they wanted her to go
– thing.
Yeah. They wanted her to go into the jail, I believe, because they knew that in order for her to go in there, she would have to leave the gun in the at the front, you know, before she could go back to talk to this inmate that they wanted her supposedly to speak to.
She had to have been thrilled. Like, finally, she had something to do on her job.
Seriously.
Best day ever for her.
So they pulled her in to this interrogation room, essentially. Yeah. And at this point, she has no clue that she's the one being interrogated. Right. She thinks that she's there doing police work and is going to be assisting on a case. And little does she know, within like 3 minutes of this, you know, cop coming in, if you watch the interrogation, which I did, and it was long, but we'll sum it up for you here in a little bit. It's not very... There's not much substance to the whole thing. It's kind of a lot of repeating herself.
I can summarize it for you. I don't know. Okay. If somebody said so, okay. I don't know. Okay. If somebody said so, okay.
Yeah. That's basically it. But as soon as that cop said, "Do you know who John Rutan is?" Like, you could just see it in her face. Like, she was like, she tried to.
The eyes like bugged out like a cartoon movie. Like, and
obviously,
like,
you know
around.
You're busted. Like, why else would they be asking you about that?
Yeah.
But she played dumb. Like, she's like, "Oh, yeah, that guy? Like, yeah, you know, we were friends back in college. And, you know, what's this all about? And, you know, it was a million years ago. Like, I just don't really remember everything. But, you know, yeah, I've heard of him. You know,
sure.
Just acting like it was no big deal.
Especially whenever they asked about, did you ever see his wife? Oh, did I go to her office? Huh.
I may have met her. I don't know. I can't say
did
if I met her.
I physically confront her? I can't remember. If I got a knockdown drag out with somebody, I'm going to remember that.
Well, that if you feathered them, you're definitely going to remember, I would say.
I think the feathered hair started getting into her ears at some point during this conversation.
This kind of went on and on, like I said, for an hour.
An hour and 13 minutes.
I listened to like the first 30 minutes and then I text Melissa and said, how far into this do they nail her? Because this is a lot of repeating the same thing over and over. So then I just fast forwarded and watched the end of it where they asked her if she would be willing to submit a DNA sample so that they could just rule it out, you know? If it was nothing, you know, then it was nothing. But they wanted, you know, they had reason to believe that she could be involved, and they wanted to know, would she submit her DNA? And her answer was, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean, maybe?
Yeah.
You know, like,
What are the determining factors here?
Right. So they did let her leave. They told her she was free to go. And
I loved this part.
Yeah. They told her she was free to leave. And she said that she needed to talk to someone, assuming a lawyer.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yep, you need a lawyer up at this point. Mm-hmm. I would say so.
I would have said an hour and 13 minutes ago. You should have thought about it, but okay.
Yeah, right. So they did let her go. And as soon as she walked out the door, they arrested her. I don't think I mentioned, though, that they had gotten a hold of something, a discarded, like, drink bottle or something, and used that to test the DNA, which,
they had already
of course, was
DNA.
A match. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I did, in some of the stuff I read, I was reading that actually her lawyer really tried to dispute that evidence and saying that, like, the DNA tube was not properly stored, or the baggie that it was in was, like, not sealed all the way or whatever. Yeah. And so he tried to say that that evidence couldn't be used against her because of that. Okay, seriously, I'm so glad that the jury didn't buy that because, like, I'm sorry, even if there was a, you know, mistake and you accidentally opened up the little baggie that the tube was in, it's not a mistake that's going to be like a 99% match of your DNA, okay?
Right,
that's obviously your DNA. Like, just shut up and, you know, you're caught, you know?
Close your eyes and go to jail.
Close your eyes and go to jail. She was arrested on June 5th, 2009, and charged, of course, with first-degree murder. And on March 9th, 2012 is when she was found guilty and sentenced to 27 years in prison, and she gets credit for time served. So what? I don't understand this. Like, why are we giving her credit for anything? Okay, she already walked a free woman after she killed someone. You know, she spent almost 25 years of her life, like, living like a normal person when she should have been in jail the whole time. And
I think it's pretty normal for them to give them credit for time served because she was already in there for 3 years.
I don't care.
It's just that the prison sentence was so life.
27 years. She did. And yeah, exactly. She murdered someone. And like, and I don't know. And
in an hour and a half murder. I mean, that's a long, terrible way.
Right. But you would think the judge and like the whole system would be even more pissed off at her because she was a cop. Okay. Yeah. And this whole time she's been an officer.
Detective.
She just had kidding. A badge. Jeez. True. She was a legit police officer.
She was.
She will be eligible for parole in 22 years. Well, I guess I wrote 22 years, but that was probably from the time that she...
That was 5 years ago. Do the math.
Right. So now she's 57 years old and she'll be 74 when she's eligible for parole. So, you know, you got a few good golden years left there at the end.
Maybe she'll get a new haircut by the time she gets out. She'll update it somehow. So that is our story of
Sherry Rasmussen.
And Stephanie Lazarus, depends on how
Spazarus.
You want it. Spazarus.
Joe Rutten. Well, yeah. She called him Rutten, but it looks like Rutten.
I don't know. She probably knows better than us. She's got the nudie pics to tell. Thank you for listening to that. We have a couple I'm Invincible wins, and then we've got some good promos for you guys. So our first I'm Invincible win comes from Amber on the Twitter. I'm Invincible win. I make sure there's a heavy but liftable weight close by at the gym so I can knock someone out when they come after me. I love that, but does not apply to me because I am not at the gym. Mandy,
I'm shaking my head because even just the thought of having to physically lift a heavy weight in order to
like, just kill me.
You know, I know. Well, I've actually my husband's always said like, you know, good thing to use to like whack somebody over the head with would be like a cast iron skillet. Well, I'm sorry. Do you have any cast iron skillets?
I do.
I have several and I can barely even lift the biggest one with one arm. Like, yeah. I have to seriously
use I didn't know you'd even try one.
So that wouldn't work out for me. But I can see how that would make somebody feel safer.
Yeah. And my last gym experience was when I was maybe 21, 22. And it was back during that time in life where you like have just – money you're apparently trying to burn, like you're buying Neutrogena, Proactive that just like, you know, keeps coming to you every month. You're like, hey, I'm already over this, but you don't even cancel it because what is life? It doesn't matter.
Right.
Like you're doing fine. And then so the last time I went to the gym, I hadn't been to the gym in 2 or 3 months and I go show up with like my whole gym outfit and there's a sign on the door that says we've moved and the date was 2 months before. And so I turned around and went home and was like, well, this is just not for me. So good for you, Amber. Lift some weight for us. We'll eat some donuts for you. And the next one is from Jordan on Instagram. And Jordan is with the Minds of Madness podcast, which is a really great podcast. Lots of fun. Enjoy listening to them. And they have a really cool Facebook group, discussion group as well, if you want to check out. So her I'm Invincible win is, I'm Invincible win. I get home late and all the lights inside are already on as long as I'm the one that left them there.
There you go.
Yeah. That's true. There's a big difference coming home at night and there's lights on in your house and you don't see shadows. Then you're like, oh, okay, everything's fine.
Right.
You walk in and say like, don't kill me and nobody will kill you then. So.
Right. Although I do the same thing though. Like if I come home and there's a light on that I don't know if I left on. Like,
oh, I don't have the memory for that.
I don't either really. But then, you know, I always like to think that I'm responsible enough to shut all the lights off before I leave. But realistically, I'm not. So
no. I do leave lights on. If I know I'm going to be home late, I leave them on inside. And we always leave our porch light on. So somebody comes
I just
up.
Try to get inside before dark.
That's true. It's not like I'm out late ever. And so that's a great one. Thank you, Jordan. And the last one is from Terry. And we got this from email. And I love this one. This is such a mom one. I'm invincible when I let my 20-year-old leave for college 8 hours away when all I want to do is drag her to her bedroom and lock her in and keep her safe.
Aww.
That's sweet. But also a felony. So please
Please don't forcibly hold your daughter against her will
in her
bedroom.
Please don't lock your children or we'll have to cover a story on you. And we don't want to do that. You seem like a very nice lady, Terry. So
no, but honestly, I'm a long way away from kids going to college, but yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I might just tell them that there's no such thing as college.
So thank you guys for listening. Keep sending in your I'm Invincible wins. We'll have our Patreon episode up in the next day or two if you were interested in that. And now we have two promos of shows we're really excited about. One is with one is for Kiwi Crimes. If you haven't listened to Jess with Kiwi Crimes, she's great and has a great accent, and everything she says just sounds lovely. And I could hear her say the word toilet, and I think that would sound really cute and adorable. But she's great and covers really cool cases. And the other one is Javier with Pretend Radio. And I am obsessed with this show and told everyone about it. But he does a lot of episodes. We'll let him explain it to you, but lots of episodes of people pretending to be different people in life. And also, his wife is apparently a fan of our show. Oh. He said our show is like crack for moms. So
what? That's right.
Yeah. Mandy just did the oddest dance, and I'm so glad nobody had to sit through that.
This is why we don't do a YouTube channel.
Yeah, never. So thank you, Javier's lovely wife. And thank you guys for listening. And we'll be back next week unless the hurricane comes and takes us away.
Yeah, guys, we just will the hurricane away for us because we are a little worried that Hurricane Irma might spoil our plans.
Yeah, and then poor hurricane, people are still recovering from Hurricane Harvey. So I was invited to an event that said everyone point your fans towards Hurricane Irma. And as dumb as that sounds, like
I want to try it.
Part of me wants to try. I want to do something. So hope you have a great week, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Kia ora, I'm Jess, the host of the Kiwi Crimes podcast. Each week, I'll share a missing persons or murder case from New Zealand. I discuss cases that are well known, as well as cases that you might not have heard of. Some cases will be recent and ongoing, others will be cold. A new episode or minisode releases every Wednesday. You can find Kiwi Crimes anywhere you get your podcasts. I hope you'll join me as I explore the crimes that rock New Zealand. Ka kite anō.
Hello, moms and murder fans. I'd like to introduce you to a documentary-style podcast about real people pretending to be someone else. It's called Pretend Radio. It's about con artists, false prophets, and real people who are living a lie, like this man, who worked as an FBI undercover agent for 27 years.
So what I had to do was a cold approach, which is in undercover cases is the most difficult. So Mahmoud looks at me, but he's still glaring, and he barks some orders in Arabic. So I'm thinking to myself, did Mahmoud just tell him, get the Uzis and pull the van up by the back door?
And we learn how one man went from being a small-time street thug to running a multi-million-dollar medical scam.
He goes, the doctor went to jail, right? And I was like, the doctor went to jail. I was like, no, I didn't know that. Why would he go to jail? He said, yeah, man. I called my lawyer and I tell him, hey, man, look, I think I got a little problem. He says, what happened? I said, I talked to this guy. He said, the doctor went to jail. I'm pretty sure that if the doctor went to jail, they're going to probably be looking for me as well.
If you like what you heard, subscribe now to Pretend Radio. And follow us on Twitter, Pretend_radio. Remember, fake it till you make it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Moms of Murder podcast. Make sure to check back with us next week for a new episode. You can also find us at momsandmurder.com, where you can connect with us via social media. Please make sure you subscribe and give us 5 stars, because giving us 4 stars would be a crime. Thanks so much.